And we are recording. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Monday, December 21st, and you're tuning into the fifth episode of MWM Moments with Marus. And today we'll be discussing acting, agencies, and advancing the industry with our very own Tiana Jackson. Just giving a little bit of her bio here. Tiana Jackson is a talent and literary agent for the Jackson Agency, headquartered in Century City, California. Ms. Jackson built her agency from the ground up within the entertainment industry's most competitive market, Los Angeles. Anchored on the Avenue of the Stars in Century City, Tiana decided to start her own agency after fighting barriers to entry, not only for herself, but for artists and writers of color, LGBTQ plus identifying and senior citizens. Ms. Jackson made history by becoming the first Writers Guild of America franchise in Atlanta, Georgia, and is believed to be the first known Black woman with 100% ownership of her agency to become a WGA franchise in Los Angeles. With her agency dedicated to the underestimated, underrepresented, and underserved, Jackson applies a root for the underdog mentality to fostering the careers of emerging artists. She looks forward to providing representation that matters to the exceptionally talented artists of the world. Additionally, she is the first Black agent to ever speak at the world famous The Actors Studio and has been featured in the New York Times, Medium, Oz Magazine, and Arizona Informant for her commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion while facing adversity through resilience. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the one and only Miss Tiana Jackson. Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Tiana, you don't know how long actually it's been taking me to muster up the courage to like ask to interview you. So I'm just grateful that you agreed and said yes and that you're here today. Thank you for your time.
Why? I'm a regular person.
I know, it's when you read a bio like that, come on, I can't help myself. You know, I'm over here shaking. But again, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. Let's just check in really quick. It's the beginning of the week. How's this week going for you so far? Is the vibrational frequency of this conjunction affecting you in any way?
I mean, I just feel more empowered. Today's a busy day, so December did not get slow like I thought it would be.
Right. So you're always doing something. You always got something going on. Even while you're driving, you're freaking on Instagram Live, giving us an update about the industry, giving us an update about life. But so far, you're doing okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I do want to kind of poke at that just a little, just because we're veering towards the end of this year. We're at the tail end of 2020. Pandemic, social justice uprisings, overall political fuckery, if you will. I'm curious to know, has this pandemic served as a blessing or a burden for you personally and professionally?
It's mainly been a blessing. We, for the most part, obviously, you know, it remains to be seen the last couple of days here of the year, but we survived. There were so many other agencies that are called boutiques that had to close their doors because they just couldn't sustain. And we were able to expand in Chicago and we're getting ready to launch a music department, expanded into authors and novelists. So it really was a year of growth for us on the business side. And really for me personally as well, just going ahead and knowing my worth, knowing my value, and just no longer entertaining the fuckery.
Wow. Right. And so what are some of the things you had to do in order to make those things a reality, both in the professional and personal world?
You know, it's like what people talk about when they're like, you know, make sure you set boundaries. And you're like, what is that? You know, what does that mean? And it really just meant like, hey, you know what, T, you've been out here doing this damn thing all by yourself all this time. You know what you're doing. And if people can't recognize that or see the value in what it is that you have to offer, fuck them.
Right. And that's interesting to hear because, you know, since the time that I've met you, and we'll go into that in a little bit, but I felt like you already had strong boundaries to begin with. So you've expanded that even more so is what I'm hearing.
I mean, we've had, you know, what I call standards, expectations of, you know, bare minimum requirements that any artists should have before they seek representation. Yes. But then we got to a point where we set those minimums and people still just weren't rising to meet them, but we were still entertaining representing them. And so that's where we got to the point where we're like, look, enough's enough. I can't continue to carry you guys any further than I already have. We now have to say with a definitive no, no, you cannot be here. You don't meet the standard.
Yeah. And I mean, that's proven to be a very, very effective choice on your end. As you see, you know, when you let go of the things that aren't serving you, you're able to open up to things and new ideas and new doors for the agency. So big ups to you on that one. I want to take a selfish moment really quick to revisit the Jackson anniversary that we had last year in Malibu, the party that we had, and we were able to celebrate both your father. I believe he was celebrating his birthday that night as well. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then obviously our agency's anniversary, that night, on top of, you know, the amazing evening that was, I remember vividly seeing your dad wearing a Buffalo Soldier hat. And I want to pick your brain about that a little bit, because I want to know first, was he a Buffalo Soldier in the Civil War, Buffalo Soldier in the Philippine American War, when and where?
Yeah, so he's not that old. He's 80 now. So he, my father was an MP in the United States Army during the Vietnam era, but he was never, on the front lines. He was an MP that was stationed in Okinawa. He had been stationed in Germany. He had been stationed in Chicago. In fact, a fun fact that he loves to talk about is the fact that he guarded a missile silo that was literally at the back of a park in Chicago and nobody had any idea. And that at some point, I guess, maybe during like the Cuban Missile Crisis, one day they kind of popped up out of the ground. So the Buffalo Soldiers, as you know, were an all-Black regiment. We had, and I would say we still have, some serious segregation issues here in the United States. And so when they did let Black people serve, they segregated them into some units. There's been obviously some movies that have been made. We have a couple of Medal of Honor recipients that are actually from Arizona. The home of the Buffalo Soldiers is Fort Huachuca, which is down in Southern Arizona. And every year, my dad's club would have a annual roundup, essentially, down in Tombstone, Arizona, where they'd gather and just have a great time. They do a parade and all those kinds of things. So my dad created the Buffalo Soldiers Motorcycle Club of Arizona, and then created his own national franchise as America. And so you'll see some other folks with different insignia. They're a part of a national chapter that's not us. We actually created our own. It's a familial trait in my family. We always just build our own thing. And so through that, we have a nonprofit and we do community-based things like the guys will go and present colors at various events. We will make donations. Like right now, my dad's getting the money together for the annual turkey donations. We get these like $25 gift cards that come with everything a family would need for Thanksgiving. So it has like turkey, the dressing, all these things, and it can feed a family of like 4 to 6. And so we give those to some of the schools that have, you know, students that are severely underserved, impoverished, that kind of thing. So that way, at least for, you know, this time of year, they're getting a halfway decent meal. We've done the Toys for Tots. We've just done a lot of things. My dad's very, very active in the community. And also he knows all the history of the state of Arizona because my family has actually been here since the 1800s. Wow. Arizona didn't become a state until February 14th, 1912. And so a woman actually had reached out because I was at a party and she had overheard me say that. And she was like, hey, can I interview you and your family? We're doing a piece, you know? And so he's gearing up for that. So he's excited. So I just pulled a bunch of pictures I didn't even realize we had of our grandmother. You know, my family, we're actually Blackfoot Indians. And so if you are unfamiliar with that, there is this, you know, common debate about whether or not Native Americans were Black or if they were as what you see today. And so in my family, we have Blackfoot and Cherokee running through there as well. So it's just a rich history. And so my dad pays tribute to that legacy. And we've had members internationally. We had a guy that was in Bermuda who saw us and wanted to join. And we have, you know, whites and Blacks and women, you know, as well as men in there. And we just go out and just do good. That's really what it's all about. And so he reps, you know, for the Buffalo Soldiers really hard. It was the 9th and 10th Cavalry and the 14th and 15th Infantry. Yes, and then you have the movie that Spike Lee did where they were overseas dealing with some stuff in Italy as well. And in military history, the Buffalo Soldiers are the most decorated unit of all time. And so you've kind of seen some changes with Trump kind of handing those things out, if you ask me, to a lot of people, just to try to balance out the numbers. But there were a lot of heroics. In 2009, we took the cremated remains of Corporal Isaiah Mays by a motorcycle all the way to Arlington and had him reinterned with full military honors. In short, he was a Medal of Honor recipient. He was set up by his white captain to have the pay wagon, which had, I think, about $500,000 on it. It got attacked. And so quite a few people died. Corporal Mays took a couple of shots, I think, in the hip and the leg. And so he crawled and walked a few miles and told everyone what happened. They were able to figure out it was the captain that set him up. He was awarded the Medal of Honor. I did a video that's actually on the agency's YouTube page for the USS Oscar Austin. Oscar is a young man who died diving on a grenade during the Vietnam War, I believe. And he saved a lot of lives. And so posthumously, they gave him the Medal of Honor and they named a really badass first class naval destroyer after him. And so he's just out there kicking ass. So we've gotten to do some really, really cool things by starting that community-based organization.
That's amazing to hear. I mean, much respect. I salute your father. I salute your family. Your family is Arizona history. Your family is American history. So, I mean, you know, thank you for sharing all of that rich history with us. I'm curious. I have some follow-up questions about the things that you just said, but I'm also very curious to know. You do have military background yourself, right?
Yes. When the economy tanked, right after we took Isaiah to Arlington, I enlisted in the Army. So at like 28 years old, I enlisted as an officer candidate in the Army Reserve. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And so having all of that said, I'm curious to know now, you know, kind of bridging it with the agency and the industry, how has your military background and lineage informed your ability to sort of navigate this world in any way, shape, or form?
The one thing that it did do is you have to, what they would say, putting the mission first. So it doesn't matter what's going on in your personal life. You've got to do the job, and they've got it structured to where if you don't do the job, they will throw you in jail. So you have no choice, basically. And so that's one thing that did carry over, because like people don't even know this. My grandfather died in within the first year of the agency, maybe the first or second year. Nobody knew. I just kept, you know, doing my thing. You know, we've had all kinds of stuff happen with me and everything. I mean, you've seen stuff where I'm like, yeah, I'm at the ER. I'll be at the office by 10, you know? So it's just one of those situations to where it's like, it doesn't matter what's going on with me. I have over 150 people that are relying upon me to pay their bills. And that's not a responsibility that I take lightly. Do I really need to take it that seriously? Probably not. Most agents don't, right? But for me, it really means something. You know, we made this agreement to work together so that mutually we could try to make our dreams come true. And so I take that responsibility very, very seriously.
Wow. Beautifully said. I'm curious. I want to poke this a little bit more, and I don't know why I want to keep going there, but I'm genuinely curious, like, you know, with that background and now having been an agent in this game for this long, I'm curious, do you look at this through the framework or lens of like a damn battle? Like, does it feel like a battle every single day?
No, you know, it's funny. I never have. I guess okay. If I would have, we'd probably be a bit more strategic with it than we already are. but it is an uphill battle in the sense that you're constantly trying to knock on doors that were closed.
Yeah.
And some of those doors have been welded shut permanently and they will never open for you, while others might come to the peephole just to see what you've got going on and then close the peephole back in your face, right? So I've had those instances where I've had people welcome me with open arms, want to set meetings, and I've had other people just basically talk shit to me and tell me that, you know, I ain't shit, my clients ain't shit, you know, whatever. So it's one of those deals where, you know, when they talk about how you have to have thick skin, it's definitely the kind of job where you really do have to just let stuff roll off your back.
Wow. Okay. I mean, even so, to that point, when you say you have to build that thick skin at this point, is it that, you know, if someone comes at you a certain way, you're just choosing and picking who to engage with? Or are you finding yourself constantly having to defend yourself and your position and your title and the agency? What does that look like?
Yeah, I would say last year that was definitely happening, especially like in a Facebook group that I really just had no business being in. It was just stupid. Like, I got attacked the first day I was in that group and all I did was say hello. So I was just like, okay, they accused me of some stuff that I didn't do because they just completely misread what I said. And they thought that I was going to like these IMTA showcases where they pay agents like a couple thousand to go to. And I literally was just going to showcases from like UCLA and like UC Irvine. So there were some issues there. And then me trying to defend myself, trying to explain certain things, trying to share stuff, it just turned into just this awful situation. And now it's like, yeah, we don't have time for this. You know, I've been in this game for 6 years officially. We're in year seven. Right. Now, you just get to a point where one, it's exhausting. You just can't take it anymore. You can't just sit out here and defend yourself all day. But then two, like when you read my bio, I forget about all that stuff. I really do. And there's stuff that, you know, we left out that isn't even in there. So then exactly. I'm just like, you know what, T, you've accomplished a lot. You've accomplished more than most. And that's why even in a live, I was like, you know what? You bitches haven't even been in the New York Times. Like, why are you even fucking with me right now. So it's that kind of thing where, yeah, there are moments where we do have to take a step back and be like, yo, look at what we've built. We've built something really amazing and really beautiful, and it's working.
That's awesome. Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, these are some of the things that, you know, people really don't know as to the extent of what agents go through. And I know, you know, you being a Black woman, Black agent, not all agents can say that they go through those kinds of experiences, but you've gone through them, you're going through them, and yet you're still standing. So it's a testament to your character, to your leadership. And if you haven't heard it enough, thank you for doing that, you know? Also, I just, you know, a quick plug about the Buffalo Soldiers. It was something that I really wanted to ask you for the purpose of sharing with you. So I graduated from San Francisco State University, right? That's the first college of ethnic studies. I pride myself in being able to be an alumni of that university. And for me as a Filipino American, like that's the closest thing that I can get to as a Filipino that is comparable to like a historically Black college or university. Mm-hmm. At this college, you know, this is where I learned about my community, my history, my identity. And that's where I learned about the distinct relationship between Black American soldiers and Filipino soldiers during the time of the Filipino-American War. So just a quick excerpt here, right? In Filipino-American War 1899 to 1902, 2,100 Black soldiers arrived in the Philippine Islands, followed by another 4,000. At this time, Jim Crow laws had enforced racial segregation in the American South. Black American soldiers were conflicted in their loyalty. Prominent Black leaders spoke out against the war in the Philippines, stating that Filipinos should be given the opportunity to govern themselves at least until the United States made significant progress in its treatment of Black and Native Americans. So every single time it hits October here in the States for us, that is Filipino American History Month. And this is something that we have been, at least recently, been trying to, spread and share down the line about Black and Filipino solidarity. So that was the real reason as to why I brought this up, but it seems like I've gotten so much more from what you've shared about your family's involvement. So thank you for that. All right, I'm gonna move into out of like our historical past, but revisiting sort of like our past, you and I, right? Because we have a unique relationship in that I started off with you as an intern back in 2004. I believe back when you were in the Valley, was that Northridge?
It was, I think, 2014, right? So yeah, you were there in my like first year, really, because I had moved to that office over there. I think it was kind of teetering on Northridge. It might've technically still been Tarzana. I'm not even sure, but it was down the street from CSUN.
Yep.
And we had just moved. I had like a 380 square foot office in Van Nuys that I love, but that was like my studio where I shot and created all kinds of cool stuff. But then when everybody was bothering me about not being SAG, even though I was licensed and bonded, I needed to go get roomed office, because they said, oh, you can just hang a curtain and it'll be fine. And I was like, no, let me just go get some more walls. Yeah. So I got this, that three-room office that we were in over there. And yeah, those were some interesting times. It was like the worst time of my life I had was when I became a SAG franchise. It was like being a new SAG franchise just brings out all the crazies and, like, you know, no offense to anybody, but the bottom of the barrel.
Right.
It was like folks who were SAG who had never been able to get representation, and you could see why. You know, the resumes were not properly formatted. They didn't know how to slate. They didn't know where an eye line was on a camera. They just didn't know anything.
Right.
And a lot of times I started asking people, like, how did you get in the union? Because for me, when I was in college, it was so coveted. It was like, you know, it's really hard to get in, and you're considered a professional, you're this, you're that. And then new media came along, and apparently the union just started letting in everybody who paid the three
the
grand.
Dues, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was just like, you know, I had people coming in and they didn't know anything. And I'm like, how did you get in the union? And they were like, I did a web series. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I kind of learned, like, you know what? Some of these non-union talent are going to be stronger than what the union has currently.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had open calls. We had this, that, and the other. Your days were actually quite calm. So I think you just brought that energy with you.
And that's the funny thing, Tiana, because what I want to talk about is some of the recollections of my time at that office. Okay. First of all, I want to say that it's beautiful to see how far the agency has expanded. And I'm going to actually ask you to boast about how much it's expanded in a little bit. But I want to go back to some of the things that I remember as I was, you know, tucked away in my corner of the office, you know, trying to do my little task outs and whatnot. You were dealing with all kinds of stuff. Like, I remember eavesdropping on a conversation between you and the client. Won't say that person's name, but, like, they were literally begging you to take them back, right? Take them back. And you are going through, like, point A, B, C, all the way up to Z about why, you know, you'd given them so many chances and how it just wasn't going to work. But still, they were trying to aggressively, and I'm talking about, I remember that man's tone, like the vibration of his tone reaching me all the way on the other side of the office. And you were over here, like, still putting up with it, you know what I mean? As graciously as you could. And those are some of the things that people don't really know that agents go through. You know what I'm saying? Do you remember that?
And that could be a whole bunch of people at this point. You're going to have to remember who that was. I think it might be the same dude that I had to end up bringing my gun to my office for.
I remember you telling that story. Oh my gosh. Can you just briefly tell people that story? Because that's crazy.
Awful. So, you know, over the years, and that's something I talk about, is like, as a woman, you have issues with personal safety, especially when you're dealing with men.
Right.
And so there was a man who I had taught a whole bunch of stuff. I taught him how to edit. I shot, like, reels for him. I did shots for him. Like, we were going above and beyond because I wanted it so bad. And that, you know, we're talking about, like, where is the tipping point? It's like now today on the 21st, I'm getting superpowers and I'm just like, enough is enough. Right.
Yep.
When it was time to go SAG, I needed three letters of recommendation. I already had the letters of recommendation, but he had been such a supporter of the agency. I said, well, you know what? Let's have him be involved in this process. So I asked him for one of the letters and I wrote everything. They just had to sign it. Mm-hmm. And so when we got approved as SAG AFTRA, I had sent an email out to the people that I wanted to retain, because the one thing they didn't tell me was that your regular contracts become void once you become a franchise. Now, today I would just ignore that, but back then I didn't know. So I was like, oh my God, this is awful, blah, 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 blah. I was like, I have no clients. And so I emailed selectively, like, who I wanted, but I think I made the announcement on my personal Facebook, not realizing that this joker was on there. And so I have this weird thing with, like, spirit and how, like, I'm protected. And so I woke up in the middle of the night and checked my phone, and I had an email from him saying, oh, congratulations on being SAG. I'll be by the office in the morning to get my contract. And I was just like, oh no. Now, during our time together, where I'm teaching him how to edit, you know, doing all this stuff, he's hanging out at the office all the time with us. Mm-hmm. And he started saying, you know, some things, like, basically saying, like, oh, you know, I was in the military too, and I'm just not right, you know, my head's messed up and blah, blah, blah. And then one day he said something that's the ultimate red flag to any woman. if you ever get locked out of your office, don't worry. I know how to break in.
Oh my, yeah.
So you know how Wanda Sykes in her, one of her sets talks about how, you know, it gets downloaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that, you're just like, oh wow. And so when he sent that email, it was like red flag, DEFCON 1. Oh no.
Mm-hmm,
and so something just wasn't right about that morning. And I'm like, this dude's already crazy. He's already basically saying that because he was one of the people who gave me the letter for SAG that he feels entitled. He's basically trying to like blackmail me into a contract, and it just wasn't going to happen. So that morning was crazy because I spent the morning literally running to Best Buy, buying a security camera system, then ran back, bought another one, was running around trying to set up the cameras, making sure all the doors were locked. Like, it was just not fun.
Yeah.
And then constantly being on the phone with my dad and my best friend because they're worried about me and they're like checking on me incessantly because I told them what was happening.
Yeah, and didn't you have to make phone calls to like the security guard downstairs to make sure like, you know, you were in the clear or whatnot? Like,
yeah, so after, yeah, there's more. After he, so eventually he arrived. Mm-hmm. And I had the doors all locked up. And if you remember, my windows faced the parking lot. So that was great. I had like popped open the blinds just a bit so you couldn't quite see in, but I could see out. Dang. And so he came and he was banging on the door and everything and was trying to get in. I ended up like calling LAPD and I'm literally standing in my conference room, like shaking because I'm like, this door is nothing. You know, anybody can kick this door in. This door is cheap little particle board. And I'm standing there with my firearm just shaking. And I'm like, please do not, you know, please just don't come through this door, basically. Like, I am definitely in fear of my life. I already had spoken to LAPD, but they were like, well, you have to tell him to leave. And then if he doesn't leave, you know, we'll come back out. And so we had scenarios where I thought I could just ice him out and just sit there. Nothing. And he just, and he literally sat down in the hallway in front of the door. I could see his shadow under the door from the lobby.
Oh my like, God.
Are you kidding me? Now, meanwhile, the dentist, the lawyers, everybody got clients coming in and out. And this grown man, so I ended up calling the building manager and I said, hey, I think his name was Sean. I said, can you look at the cameras and see if there's somebody sitting in front of my door? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, there is. I'm like, shit, okay. So I said, I've got to call LAPD and get this guy to leave. Like, he's not leaving and yada, yada, yada. And so he was like, well, do you want me to come out there? I said, no, do not engage this dude at all because it's just volatile, right? So of course I go to call back LAPD, cannot even get a hold of them. Phones are just ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. I'm like, oh my gosh. So finally, at that point, he had gone back to his car and he saw that my car was still sitting there. So then he came back and I told him, I was like, you know, you need to leave. And he was like, but why, Tiana? I've got the letter right here showing that, you know, I assigned for you to be a SAG franchise. Like, he really was trying that nonsense. And I'm like, okay, obviously I made a mistake in making you one of the three people. I could have just gotten somebody else to give me this letter. And so he left, and luckily the timing was good because the other guys that were coming in to do their contracts weren't coming in until the afternoon, and so the timing was great. He had left, and so the boys came in to do their stuff, and I said I had to lock the door because somebody was trying to like force me to give them a contract, and I'm like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I just had the phone ringing incessantly for like 5 minutes to LAPD's desk sergeant. Nobody would pick up. So finally he picked up. I told him what was going on. He said, you know, he's gone now. He said, well, basically what you need to do is you need to notify him of, what is it, the 832 PC, which is the penal code for trespassing. So mm-hmm. I typed up this whole thing, did what I did, sent it to the building manager. And the building manager was like, this is great. You know, and I sent it to him, sent it to his mama's house, everything, and just left it at that. And so I found out later that he went into the veterans group that we're in together.
And wow.
You know, tried to come to my office and that I hid from him and this, that, and the other. And so the admin caught it, but she like screenshotted it and sent it to me. And I was like, all of that is true. Like, I hid. I sure did. I absolutely hid from that man because he absolutely terrifies me. And so then I just told her, like, I can't even go to events anymore because I don't even want to run into that guy. And so I don't even go to those. I haven't gone to an event in years because I just don't want to see him or have to go through that bullshit ever again. So yeah, that was the time I had to bring my gun to my office because somebody was crazy and wanted me to give them a contract when I wasn't going to.
That's wild. I mean, I you know, I've heard the story before. It gives me even more chills now that I'm here on the line with you. I mean, all of that to say, this person nor anybody for that matter would be able to get away with that in Century City. Okay.
Because, that is exactly why we're in that building, because you can't get anywhere without security.
Right. Yes. You have to have ID. You have to check in. They have to escort you up. Like, it's a whole experience. So, hey, you know, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Now, you know, again, back to that moment in time, you were doing a lot, again, like to what you were saying, you were doing a lot of things because you were hungry. One of the things that I would remember you doing was taking headshots for your new and up and coming clients, especially for those who were non-union, you know what I mean? And those are just a sprinkle of the things. I'm just gonna quickly mention some of the other things that sets Tiana Jackson apart from many other agents, right? First of all, she knows our names and she knows how to pronounce them correctly. she has us doing things like monologue challenges every year. She communicates with us via Slack to make sure that we have our shit together, to keep us motivated, even to cuss us out sometimes, but that's all out of love, you know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of, you bring us together through parties, the list goes on, right? You just hosted a table read for the agency to help put us out there. These are the things that not many agents take the time to do. And I'm curious to know, like, do your agent colleagues do these type of things? And you know, what motivates you to go this route, to go this hard, to go all the way out like this?
Yeah, no, nothing we do here is normal. But I have to say the table reads were all Alfred's, because he was the one who came and said, hey, T, I really want to do this reading of Superstore and I want to use the people from the agency. And it was just like, how do you say no to that? Like, I was busy AF during that time too.
But the fact that you were down though, and the fact that you were down to put in all of the rehearsal hours, you know what I mean? Help with all of that, like, I'm just saying, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, because he was just like, yeah, and I want you to read stage directions. I was like, oh, Jesus, okay, so.
Yeah.
At first I was like, are you kidding me? Like, do you know how busy we are right now? But I was like, you know what? No, this is something he wants to do. He's done outstanding work, so you'd be a fool not to be involved in anything that he's doing. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most dedicated artists that I've ever met, I'll be honest. Like, that kid, he does method. Like, it's just beautiful to watch him work, and in the monologues he's done, having fun with the green screen, like that one he did where he had no arms and legs. I was like, this dude is so yeah. But then after Superstore, I had so much fun that I was like, let's do another one, you know. So then that was my fault, and then we had the most iconic movie of all time. And then of course we had no internet that night. So it I was telling casting director Fred, I was just like, yeah, everything that could have went wrong, like gone wrong, went wrong that night. Like, it was like, we lost internet. Nobody would mute themselves. Like, it was
everything you could think of, but it came together.
And it was a good experience. I mean, that was hard work, because that was hard work for everybody. It's like, we were doing the agency stuff, and then a lot of you guys were booked on shows too at the same time. It's like, people don't realize we had people booked on stuff at the same time, and they're still doing rehearsals for New York. They're rehearsing until midnight because of the time difference. It was just like dedication. I really enjoyed it. And even some people were like, yeah, was it recorded? I couldn't see it when it was live, but I want to watch it. And I was like, yeah, it's on our Facebook page. So, and then Andre said that, like, everybody has been hitting him up now because knew he was affiliated with it, and they want him to, like, shoot stuff and do all kinds of stuff. And he's like, I see now why you don't like it when people DM you. Like, this is getting out of hand. So I think it was a good move on our part to just go ahead and be vulnerable and do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I had the honor of interviewing Alfred's 2 weeks ago. And that's what I was telling him, like, hey, you know, until you had reached out to me to join the Superstore table read cast, I was in a funk. Like, I was in a real funk. And I think being in that group and that cast allowed me to get remotivated, re-inspired. And so, yeah, I mean, he's a leader, but he's also a phenomenal talent. And so big ups to him on that. And also plug to check out our Facebook page for those table reads. Come visit and take a look. Great. So, I mean, these are the things that we're talking about that sets you apart from the rest. Now that, I don't know if you consider yourself to be a more seasoned agent. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. For an agent that's more seasoned now, how do you determine whether you're willing to take folks who are really just so green, right? Or are you just like, no, now I'm just sticking to the ones who have their full package together?
Well, I mean, the beautiful thing, that's also why we rep across the board. We can develop you in certain ways. We can start seeing, commercials and seeing if you start booking there, getting some traction. We can play around with the independent low budget films where we can't really do much damage. So we have that ability to try to get some opportunities for you and see how you handle them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, do people rise up to the occasion, or are you kind of left like?
It's very, very seldom do they rise to the occasion. You know, when we're talking about like me fussing at everybody, it's funny because the only time, unfortunately, I seem to be able to get everybody to rally bodega is when I'm just like, if you don't do this shit by Friday, I'm dropping you. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't even have to do that. And that's something that I keep talking about. It's like, I shouldn't have to threaten you with termination to get you to want to be great. But for some reason, that's what it takes. It's like, even now with pilot season prep. Okay, guys, I need the 10 by Monday morning. Next thing you know, I'm getting 8 people at the 0 hour. I'm like, what is it with you guys in procrastination? It's not going to go over well when it comes to your career.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I hate to put this out there like that, T, but like, honestly, I feel like a lot of us respond well to that kind of, communication. For me, especially in my, family upbringing, that's how you got me out of bed, on a Saturday morning. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I just had to say that. But okay, getting back on track here, what do you think informs your leadership and informs your ability to create the beauty and the masterpiece and the mastermind behind the agency today?
I just try to do the right thing. That's really where it comes from. It's like, people will always say, Tion, you have a really good heart. They may not like my mouth, but they know that I genuinely care about people and always try to take care of people and look out for people at all times. And so that's really where it comes from. It's about, hey, I think that, so like when I was in basic, they have this whole leadership cycle that they do with the students. Because I was an officer candidate, at first I was a squad leader. So I had 10 people and we would just make sure everybody was straight, uniforms, issues, blah, 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 blah. And then on the next cycle, I got made the platoon guide, which is like the platoon sergeant, basically in charge of the whole platoon, which is like 45, 50 individuals.
Yeah.
And that was when things changed, because I couldn't just be wilding out being Jackson. I now was responsible for, 50 bodies. Right. And we had to find unique ways to navigate and do things. And I had a couple of people that I went to basic with that were like, I learned a lot about leadership from watching you and how to navigate certain situations. Because, going back to the Buffalo Soldiers, we've had guys in the club that were in Vietnam. Like, we have a guy who has 2 Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star, right?
Right.
So you would hear stories from these guys about stuff. And then if you go back to the numbers, the most officers killed in action were from West Point during the Vietnam War. Because there was this thing where you were out of touch with the humanity and the human element. You're at this, prestigious U.S. military academy, and you're the best of the best. You're the cream of the crop, allegedly. But then you don't have social skills. And I actually found that out from a friend of mine who was a captain who did communications at the White House. He said, I wouldn't change anything going to the school that I went to and going through ROTC, because I pledged a fraternity. Mm-hmm. I got to do all these things. So that way, when I got into the military, I had social skills. It's not about just yelling at somebody and saying, you have to do this because I outrank you, blah, 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 blah. Because a firefight could break out and they might just pop you in the back of the head. So it's really about, getting these guys to understand. It's like, listen, I'm just the medium here. They give an order, they tell me, and I just tell you guys. I can't make you do anything. We have ways of, Article 15s and stuff like that, administrative issues, but I can't force somebody to go clean up some, pick up something, clean up something. I can't do that. All I can say is, hey, this is what we need to do today. Who's coming with me? And that's really just where it comes from.
Yeah. And see, to your point, Tiana, I want to share this with the audience a little bit about what that has looked like for me seeing your social skills at play, right? And I'm just gonna revisit the time we were at the party at Marty's apartment, right?
Oh my god.
The moment that you, this is the funny part, okay? Because as with many other people, you know, I was nervous to go there just because we hadn't all really been in the same room together. This was one of the first times, but I was like, okay, let's just do the damn thing. I went, and Tiana Jackson took me and introduced me to everybody by my name, the correct pronunciation of my name. And then she also gave background about my life. She didn't just say, oh, this is Maruz, he's been signed since, blah, blah, blah. No, you talked about freaking me working at UCLA with the Filipino student population there and how I was using, you know, education to empower. And I was like, T, I love you, thank you. You know what I mean? Those are one of those things. And then when we got to the little talent segment portion section, there were people who were trying to do all kinds of different acts. And for people who weren't so sure of themselves, you were like, okay, try it this way. Or, oh, it's because you don't, you haven't really, you were like literally coaching them through it. And I don't know, I just felt like it was important to mention that because your social skills bleeds into your leadership in formal settings, in social settings, and it's just a beautiful thing to see.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Okay, so now I'm gonna keep my promise in that I'm gonna ask you to boast about the different ways that the agency has evolved here up to 2020. Can you just share with us all of the different ways that we've expanded?
Yeah, so, you know, it's that whole started from the bottom, now we're here, right?
Right.
Started as just this little engine that could with 50 or 60 clients in my little studio in Van Nuys, and went and became a SAG franchise, and then people just got crazy, so I gave it back. I literally turned it back in, was like, I'm out. And then got to a point where I didn't even have an office for a couple of years. I was, you know, everything we do is virtual, and that's what I've been saying. So it was funny during COVID when I was taking meetings, people were like, how are you adjusting? I was like, oh, we've been doing this since 2015. This is just Monday. Right. You know, and they're like, oh, you were just such a forward thinker. And I'm like, no, it's just like, limited overhead. Like, if I don't need an office, why pay for one? You know? So then some kind of way the Century City office came up at like a steal of a deal. And I saw the building and saw all the amenities, and I was like, yeah, I'll take it. And yeah. So then we ended up being there. And I grew up, like, for one, my father, you know, grew up in the projects. My mother grew up in Watts. Like, people just don't understand. So my dad, for him to build what he's built, is not the typical story. It's just a testament to his strength. So we just got to a point where it's like, it's just in my DNA to just build and do things that come naturally, to follow your heart, you know, follow your gut, follow God's will, basically, if you will, and just do the right thing. And if you do the right thing, great things will happen. Now, there have been stuff that's happened that's been like amazing publicly, but like privately, it's been a whole ass mess. So like, I remember waking up one day to a Google alert to a deal that I wasn't privy to, but it was one of my clients.
Okay.
And I remember having the conversation with my best friend, and I was like, this is extremely disrespectful, right? Like, I'm not tripping. He was like, no, it's really disrespectful. I said, but you know what's funny is like, God works in mysterious ways. You know, it's kind of like the monkey's paw, where it's like, you know, be careful what you ask for, because it'll come, but it won't come in a way that you like, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it was just like, okay, cool. We're in the trades. I had nothing to do with it, but I did ask to be put in the trades, you know? So it's like, it wasn't beautiful, but it happened. And so it's like, okay, you have to understand that like, not everything is going to happen the way you want it to. You know, you have no control over a situation. That's the first thing I can tell you about entertainment. Deals will get done. They'll be messy. They'll be sloppy. But at the end of the day, what goes out publicly is okay, it's done. It's happening. Yay. Celebrating you. So it's really just about staying true to your purpose, your path, you know, and what you want for yourself and what you want for other people. But the biggest lesson I've learned along the way, because I really can't boast about it, it's like, look, we're in Century City, we're in Georgia, we're in the Southwest, we're in New York, we're in Chicago, you know, we're in all these places. There's really nothing to boast about because it's just a shit
ton coming.
It's just a shit ton of work. Like, I'm just creating more work for myself. But what I have learned is that, you know how they say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink?
Yeah.
that was really the lesson of this year and really the lesson of last year is like, we did all of these things. We pulled along all these people. We busted all these people trying to get them to be what we needed them to be successful as one cohesive unit. But you get to a point where it's like, why are we doing this? Why are we pulling these people along to greatness when we could just work with the people who are already there? And so we just kind of got to that point where it's like, you know what? I might just have 25 clients because at least I've got 25 solid people ready to go who have shown that when we need them to make an audition at the last moment, they make it. When they turn in their self tapes, they're properly labeled, they have their slate shot, they've given us multiple options. Like, just some people do naturally what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Other people, not so much. Now, I do understand that sometimes you guys get overwhelmed, but that's why we tell you, reach out to us so we can help you. Cause that's happened too, where I'll go and talk to somebody like, hey, I noticed you didn't do this. Well, it was so much, I just didn't know where to start. I'm like, okay, so just start with one thing. That's all you have to do.
Yep. Step by step. Well, dang, that's crazy because as to what you were saying with, you know, getting to where you want to get to is messy, is sloppy. I think, you know, seeing your journey from my end, it's crazy because you've been able to really survive and thrive in this industry, knowing your way around a lot of the legalities of this industry too. And so I really want to ask you about that, you know, when it comes to the legal jargon, the legal policies, like, did you have to sit and read a book about that? Or is that something that you just learned, you know, from going through it day in and day out?
A lot of it at first was just logic and common sense to me.
Okay.
And at some point I did go to the first year of law school where I took a contracts class. And so then I became a little bit better with the verbiage. I mean, by no means does that make me a contracts expert, but they do talk about the elements that are required to make a contract legal and valid. Mm-hmm. So then knowing those terms, which is Q-tips, Q-T-I-P-S, I started looking at the stuff that you guys were getting and I was like, yeah, this wouldn't even hold up anyway.
Yeah,
so wow. Then we just got to a point where I would say, okay, yeah, if you put this in here and put this in here, it'll be a valid contract. But that's where I got burned. Mm-hmm. There are people that owe me money. There's this guy named Bruce. He owes me money because I redlined his contract for him and he never paid me a commission. And when I asked for it, he just kept ignoring me. And each audition came in, he went to that. And I'm like, oh, wow. So even to this day, the only reason why I keep him on my Venmo is so that when we do this biopic, he still owe me money.
Yes. Yes. Keep that line of communication open. Oh my goodness, that's crazy. Oh yeah. By the way, shout out to your mom. You mentioned, that she is from Watts. Shout out to Watts. I was a high school drama teacher at Locke High School.
That's what my mom went.
Yeah? I did not know that. Shout out to the home of the Saints. I miss you all so much. And, you know, in the future when I win my awards, I'll be shouting out the Saints as well. but anyways, thanks. Okay. You mentioned forward thinking. Let's go in that direction, right? You are a game changer. You are really shape-shifting the industry behind the scenes and now even more so in front of the world, right? And in some of your interviews, you've talked about divestment. Now, for people who are not really quite sure about what divestment really means, can you just define that for us in your own words?
Yeah, so that particular comment was about how when we were talking about, you know, the George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter, all the things that were happening with sort of this racial awakening, it was about also getting people to understand that just like how you diversify your asset investments, right, you put a little bit in everything, you also know how to remove yourself financially from a situation when a company or a person doesn't fit your morals and characters, aka could be racist. Yes. And so during that time, I started getting connected with some of the A-listers in Hollywood. So I was in a Zoom and looking at these guys and they wanted to do some things, but they didn't quite know what they wanted to do. Or, you know, somebody was already leading the way and they were like, how can we help? Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of looked at everything and I'm like, I've been holding space for you guys across the street for the last couple of years that I've been in Century City. Like, yeah. I've been trying to get you guys to work with me so that we can do some things, we can impact some real change in this industry.
Right.
But then the comment was literally made. Like, I literally had a whole Zoom fight with this little lister. I don't even know if he's considered a lister, but he organized something. And I'm sitting in there and these agents came in for these other agencies. And, you know, I'm a part of the Racial Equality Task Force. So I know exactly you know, what we have designed, and I know exactly what these other agencies are saying and doing and the questions they're asking, and I've provided phenomenal resources for them to help solve their lack of Black people problem. And so they're studying there and they're like, yeah, we're doing certain things, we're doing this, we're doing that, but they weren't, you know, and then no one was saying exactly what they were doing. And so I literally had the conversation with him and I said, why are you guys asking MASA for things when you could just leave? Because I look at it like this, and we were talking about like why I do the things that I do, realistically, and I've said this even when I gave my speech at the ATA, I said, you know, if this were a nail salon that had these same racist practices, you would have shut it down. Some people would have burnt it down to the ground. It would no longer exist. It would no longer be doing business.
Wow,
but there's something about these bigger mega agencies where they're afraid to leave. And I know why. We're finding out now through the fight with the WGA that these cats have, they own every damn thing. They own the studio, they own the production company, they own the distribution company, they own the freaking agencies for the models, the agencies for the Associated Press. I'm like, so y'all just own everything. They own the live streaming for the sports, they own the UFC, they own every piece of entertainment that they possibly can. And so these guys don't want to go back to the dark ages where they were living out in their cars. So they feel like, well, we can just, you know, let them know we're upset and demand more Black agents. I'm looking at it like, no, you got to burn the whole thing down to the ground.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let them continue to exist. And so then that's when I came up with the, you know, you got to be able to divest from oppressive systems and invest in more progressive systems.
Okay. Okay. All right. Perfect. So to that point, tearing down these oppressive systems in a place and era or generation that pretty much continues to uphold the industry in the way that it is, right? What are the ways that we can join along in this movement, whether it be institutionally on an agency level or at an actor's level, to be able to move in this direction?
I mean, I realized a while ago, this really has to deal with consumers. I've realized that these A-listers will sit up here on Instagram and cry about racial treatment, cry about their genitalia being grabbed at a party, but they're not going to leave the agency, right? So then I started looking at consumers and I said, listen, you guys are the ones that are funding all of this anyway. Right? You're the ones buying all of this merchandise. You're the ones subscribing to all of these streaming services. You're the one that's really funding this thing, whether you realize it or not. Everything is designed to get that $12 a piece, right?
From each person.
Especially when you're looking at, you know, 100 million TV sets in America. That's a lot of money, even just a dollar each person. That's $100 million. Absolutely. So that's why the entertainment industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, because you have so many people escaping from our reality. You have to remember, if you look at history, the Colosseums in Rome, right? They were there for entertainment, to pacify the masses so everybody could, you know, veg out, if you will, and escape from whatever the stress was of their workday, whatever their financial situation was, whatever their love life was. You had this entertainment. And so then we saw these issues when Colin Kaepernick started kneeling. People didn't like that. They want to watch football and watch guys beat the shit out of each other for their enjoyment. They don't care about your personal and private life. They don't care that once you leave here, you've got concussions, you've got CTE, you've got all these health ailments. They don't care about you as a person. They just look at you for the entertainer that you are. And then you saw some emboldened enough to say, shut up and dribble. So we're just looking at it realistically of saying, okay, we know what's going on. For the people that are aware, you need to spread word about the agency and what we've been doing. We're trying to convince A-listers to leave these oppressive systems and invest in more progressive systems. So like when you're recapping all these things that I'm obviously oblivious to, I had no idea that you saw and see the things that you see of what we do inside of the agency. I had no idea. I'm just doing what comes naturally to me and trying to make sure everybody's taken care of. But we need to share more stories like that. You know, because people will often say the negative, oh, well, she sent this email to me and it was me and it was this, that, and the other. And right. And that's all anybody's ever going to remember. They're not going to remember, oh, she cut my reel. She taught me how to edit. She took my headshots. She helped me pay my rent. Nobody's going to talk about that. But those are the stories that we need. We need to talk about the inclusive community that we've built here. The funniest thing since this whole, I was in the TMZ thing over the weekend, white men would come to the DMs and say, well, I'm white, but I have a script with people of color. Can I submit to you? And I'm like, you might want to visit our website.
Right.
Like, you might want to go look at how we have a little bit of everything, because I'm not like you.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see a person and think, oh, they only represent Black people because they're Black. Like, that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
Right.
So I just started saying that on live, so they'd leave me alone. I'm like, you know what? You don't even need to come here, because if this is how you think, then you're definitely not going to fit in with the rest of us.
Yeah. Woo, so much gold right there, T. So much gold right there. Yeah, I mean, spreading the word, being hypercritical of the things that we're consuming, because whether we know it or not, we are consumers of it. You know what I mean? You are a founder, correct, of the Black Agents Network?
I'm a co-founder, yes. I came to support Mr. Ezra Jones's vision. He had tried, you know, before, and we just couldn't find enough like-minded individuals. We happened to connect at the right time, things aligned, and boom, the Black Agents Network was formed.
That's a beautiful thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you all are working on and the goals you're hoping to accomplish?
Mm-hmm. So the Black Agents Network was formed with the idea that, you know, Black owners of agencies, meaning it's all just the owners. It's not Black agents who work for the white-owned agencies. It's just
Black-owned
agencies. Agency owners, we get together once a month, we talk shop, we help one another. So like in the past, somebody needed an email address for Amazon. So I gave them some of the contacts I had at Amazon. They had a show that when they told me about it, I said, oh, this is for A&E. So I did an introduction with my contact over there at A&E. So it's all about just networking and helping one another succeed.
That's beautiful.
And then, you know, obviously then as news got out, we started getting actors who were like, I want to get started in modeling. I want to get started in acting. I don't know what to do. Uh-huh. And so we looked at that and we were like, well, this thing is really supposed to be for us, but why don't we sacrifice a Sunday and spend an hour or two holding a webinar, and they're free, you know, and teaching you guys what you need to know to get started in said industry. So about two Sundays ago, we did our first webinar called Model Life, and and Ezra went into the nuances of the business aspect of being a model, which is stuff that's very important. If you notice, a lot of agents will just be like, oh yeah, you know, just send me your materials, and, you know, we'll see if we can get you out, blah, 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 blah. But we go into, here's what you need to do on set. Here's the voucher. You need to make sure that you fill in your time card and have somebody sign it before you leave. It's like things that you don't think about with business, because the hardest part about this industry is chasing the money after you guys wrap. There have been a couple of days, especially during COVID, where I spent all day chasing checks, checks that should have come to us already, you know, because what I found out was that the advertisers, I guess maybe they're not getting the money from the brands in time. So now these commercial production companies are basically only getting 50% of the budget when they go in to shoot the thing.
Okay.
And so that's why actors are on this net 30 now. And in some days, in some cases, a net 45. So you're asked to book quickly. Like, you do not understand how fast, like how aggressive they are with asking for you guys' contact information after you book. They're just like, okay, well, we need all this info, blah, 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 blah. And so it's like this rush. Then they book you. And then I'm chasing the fuck out of the check for the next 45 days. It's the weirdest thing, but then I'm understanding it's a cash flow thing. Commercial production companies are now like contractors, where you're constantly going from job to job to pay for the next job. So
it's
a constant, you know, cash flow issue.
So you're chasing the money from them and they're chasing the money from somebody else. Is that
part? And that's why they're not paying you, is because they really don't have it yet. Sometimes if I find, and then like the casting directors, sometimes they try to hold the payroll company's contact information hostage. Like,
yeah,
it was the weirdest thing. I had something with a producer. I was like, why, you know, I was like, I already know who the payroll tech is over there. Like, we have a check stub where it has their email. Like, all I'm doing is emailing them saying, hey, this check hasn't come yet, can you check on the status? And they're like, oh yeah, we haven't cut it yet, you know, or oh yeah, we mailed it out on this day, let me know if you don't get it by Friday, that kind of thing. But some of these people try to hang on to that stuff like it's trade secrets or something. And I'm like, we're just trying to make sure the client is getting paid. They have bills. Right. You got paid, you know, you got paid first.
Exactly.
So, it is interesting, the money aspect of it. So we're trying to make sure that you guys have a good, sound education in business, not just, okay, let's have fun with the creative part. We want you guys to be solvent and independent rather than being dependent.
Gotcha. Okay, just to clarify, what's the proper way that you all identify this network? Is it known as BAN, is it B-A-N, or is it Black Agents Network? How do you prefer to be identified?
It's both. So it is Black Agents Network, but then we'll shorten it and call it BAN, B-A-N.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So for BAN, I'm curious to know, is there a direction that you all are trying to move forward in with regards to the type of content that is produced? like having ownership of the type of stories that are being told?
Oh, that's interesting you asked that. Yeah, so we're looking at least doing some things that are gonna put our webinars out further into the media. So we're working on some of that, and we're working on a partnership with the HALP Network, who, you know, Julia, who does mocap and video games. We talked to her, and we're gonna collab. It really, like, again, it really was just so that Black owners of Black owned agencies, we could just get together and have our own support system, because there isn't one, right? But then again, with the deficiencies, and we understand, like, when we're talking about barriers to entry, you know, you can't sit up here and say that you're looking for more Black writers, but they have to be at the level of supervising producer and above, which is like a fourth promotion, you know, from a writer's room.
Yeah.
You're like two or three slots away from showrunner, but then you've deliberately kept out writers of color this whole time. But then all of a sudden, because people are demanding, you're like, okay, fine. We're looking for a supervising producer. And then you're like, oh, we can't find any. You know, we tried, we can't find any. It's like, because you never hired anybody in the most basic entry-level positions to begin with, so they never could get promoted.
Right.
And so we recognize that, not just BAN, I mean, I recognize it immediately. That's why we do a lot of the development stuff that we do, and we explain things in the way that we do, because we understand that you guys were never given the opportunity to learn most of this stuff anyway. You know, and it was something that we really thought about when we got into literary, because it was like, we know there's severe barriers to entry with that. You know, there are people that couldn't afford to go to film school. You know, there are people that couldn't afford to take a UCLA extension writing class. You know, those aren't cheap. So we knew that there were people out there who could tell great stories, but they may not know script formatting. So then we got to a point where we're like, well, we need to be able to have the resources for that. So we found that through Shannon. And so, but then you start referring people to Shannon, and then they're like, oh, well, I don't want to pay the $75 to fix this. And it's like, what? Well, then we can't work with you. You know, it's like, you're still going to have to turn in an industry standard script. And we've had that discussion on Instagram where people were like, oh yeah, I formatted my script after a Joss Whedon, and they said it was all wrong. And I'm like, yeah, because he's Joss Whedon. He's been in the game. His father's been in the game. He's a legacy. He can write any which way he wants to. Same thing with Quentin Tarantino. Just because they write that way doesn't mean that you can. And that's been cognitive dissonance when it comes to writers. And then, you know, just understanding simple little things like how to properly format a slug line, how to do a pitch deck, knowing what a treatment is, you know, knowing, you know, what a writer's room might be, you know, just having those basic skills. That these are things that I know, but it's because I went and researched it and wanted to learn more about it. And I chased it, because when I was younger, I absorbed every bit of information I could get about the entertainment industry. Something's going on with the new generation. They don't want to do that. They just want you to just give them the answer right away. But even if we gave them the answer, they still don't know how to do it. You know, people will be like, well, what's a pitch deck? Okay, Google it. I had one guy who was an insurance guy. I ended up blocking him because he got upset. And he messaged me, and he was like, well, you know, what's a pitch deck? And so then I would find it from Google, copy and paste it in the chat, give him the link, right? Well, do you have an example of what one looks like? Going to Google, example of a pitch deck, stumble upon Studio Binder. They've got a great little template. It's free. Take that, paste it in there. I'm like, you can just Google all of this. And he was like, you know what? You've always had an attitude with me, and I've never had an attitude with you. And I'm like, you're literally coming to me asking for answers that all I did was go on Google and find them for you. He didn't like that. Okay, so that's what we've been dealing with. And so when we're talking about boundaries, I just can't do it anymore. I've been doing it for so long that it's like, I can rattle off stuff in a minute. Like, I'm getting ready to go to new client orientation that I'm 3 minutes late for. And I can go in there and do it backwards and forwards with my eyes closed, because I've been doing it for so long. But for other people, it takes them a lot longer. So like, I don't have to prepare to go into stuff now, because I know my shit. So I can just rattle off stuff, be done with it, and keep it moving. But this is stuff that took me, what, 25 years of studying this industry. It's not something that I just learned yesterday. And that's what people aren't paying attention to, is that it takes time to master your craft. It's not instantaneous. It's not overnight.
Wow. Well, I mean, thank you for calling all of that out like it is and really putting that out there, because those things need to change. And unless we're having real conversations about those things and what that looks like on the ground, we're not going to really see anything tangible happen the way that we need to. So I know you mentioned you need to go to an orientation. I want to say thank you for your time. If I could just close out properly within 60 seconds, I usually do a closing ritual called MWM. You won't have to do any of it, but if you could pick a mantra that you live by, words of wisdom you want to be remembered by, or a milestone you're looking forward to, any or all of the above.
Oh, really?
I have to close this out correctly.
Oh, boy. I just live by like the motto of just do it.
Just do it. Period? Or is there more?
I mean, you know me, it's just like if you don't try, you'll never succeed. That there is truth to that. You know, if I would have never said, okay, I'm going to try this talent agency thing out, we would not even be here.
Right. And thank God you just did it. So we wouldn't be here. I certainly wouldn't be here. And I'm looking forward to all the places you're going to continue to take yourself and the agency in the year to come. So ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Tiana Jackson. Thank you so, so much. Thank you.
All right.
All right. You have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.